This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by PRMIseattle.com, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
So the mother of Kyle Rittenhouse is speaking out. She did an interview last night on Fox News with Sean Hannity, and she is calling out President Joe Biden because he was the one who decided to label Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist. Lots of folks on the left decided to call him a white supremacist, mostly because he's a white guy who did something they didn't like. And that's now the go-to. That's the go-to insult. And here's the thing about the left. You don't even have to be white to be called a white supremacist. You merely have to do things or say things that you disagree with. Now, in this case, it was a kid who decided to step up and do something in protection of a city that was under assault by Democratic voters. BLM rioters, Antifa lunatics, the ones who decided that they were going to take advantage of the fact that Democrats don't like cops and try to get them to depolice to the point of, even during a riot, you're supposed to basically stand down. Businesses, in the meantime, get hurt. People get hurt. Kyle Rittenhouse made the wrong decision, in my view, even though I understand it, to go to Kenosha. He was the one who was the victim, and he protected himself. But he protected himself with a scary-looking gun, and he protected himself against the people who were there to riot. So, well, you know. Oh, no, they weren't there to riot. They were just there to appreciate democracy in action. Got it. And so Kyle Rittenhouse was called out, and that he is getting what appears to be a fair trial because of the judge is actually a miracle to me. Everyone knows who Kyle Rittenhouse is. It doesn't seem like anyone could go into this having not made up their mind. The only good thing about that is the people who made up their mind based on a lie, based on several lies, now actually has access to the evidence in a big way. It's kind of hard to get out of seeing the video and listening to the testimony because everyone is covering this live. And I'm grateful for that. This was a kid who was the victim, is the victim of politics. And I was thinking about this yesterday and the day before as I'm catching up on some of the trial coverage that I missed during the day because obviously I'm working. You know, I asked the question a couple days ago on Twitter if the prosecutor is the most incompetent in the country because, you know, generally speaking, people only see courtrooms when it's in a movie or a TV show, and that's written in a very dramatic way. And every once in a while, you get that character who's very inept and can't actually do the job. Generally speaking, everyone is somewhat confident. Sometimes they're evil. So I was thinking to myself, and I tweeted it out, whether or not this guy is the most incompetent or is he just evil, that he's doing this on purpose, that he is trying purposely to violate this kid's due process rights. And I think it's the latter now. I can't imagine that someone as seemingly incompetent as this guy would get to that position. Not with that level of, I mean, there were moments that even I knew as a non-lawyer, although I almost went to law school, that what he was asking is beyond the scope of what they're supposed to do. For example, did you know you have the right to remain silent? Did you know that?
I've heard that.
Yeah, everyone has. Did you know that you're not supposed to impugn someone choosing to be silent because they have that right? That is the foundation of our very justice system that we're told is broken. Really? You're the one trying to break it. We got to dismantle it. It is a system of oppression. This white supremacist who shot three white people. Wait, they were white, the victims? Oh, they weren't victims. They were attacking. Okay. So the mother, Wendy, goes on Hannity to talk about this trial. And obviously she talked about how her son broke down on the stand, or as LeBron James would call it, a pretty subpar performance, which only ghouls hold that position.
I just broke down with Kyle crying like that. It made me feel heartbroken, sad, and I wanted to just go up there and just hug him and tell him it would be okay.
Now, we don't know if it's going to be okay for him. We'll see what the judge ends up doing. It's possible that he gets involved. But then Wendy Rittenhouse responded to the claims by Joe Biden and others that her son is a white supremacist.
When I saw what afterwards of the President Kennedy candidate debate, when I saw that, I was in shock. I was angry. President Biden don't know my son whatsoever, and he's not a white supremacist. He's not a racist. And he did that for the votes. And I was so angry for a while at him. And what he did to my son, he defamed him.
He did. He gets to do that, unfortunately. There's no consequences for that unless we're talking politically. And I hope that there are some political consequences for this. I don't know if we can tie it directly to this trial, but I know that people are paying attention, and I know that they are thinking in their heads that we've gone too far, that the left has gained too much power, and they are using their CRT lens to look at everything, and they say this kid is guilty because he was on the wrong side of a political position that they took in support of the riots. And people are going to look at that and say, enough is enough. We already started to see that happen. There will be riots. There will be riots, not just in Kenosha either, after Rittenhouse is found not guilty, if he is found not guilty. Now, if he's found guilty, there will be a lot of angry people. They will say that this is a miscarriage of justice. You know what they won't be doing? Rioting. And that is a very instructive position that both sides take. It's instructive to us. It tells us where these people stand, how these people act. And it's despicable. That's why the National Guard, 500 of them, are on standby. The jury's not going to come back into that courtroom until Monday. We believe, I think, that that's when the trial will start to wrap up. You'll get the closing arguments. And it seems pretty cut and dry to me. I've spent actually a lot of time following this particular case, watching the testimony and reading up on it. Not as much as Victoria Taft, by the way. Oh my God, I talked to her yesterday. She is crazy obsessed. In the best kind of way.
She's chock full of knowledge.
I missed some stuff, and she was like, okay, so here's what happened. And she gave me a rundown. I was all like, I don't have to watch it later today. You were literally quoting some of what was said today. So kudos to Victoria for doing it. Victoria, our favorite sub-host on the station. Don't tell that to anyone who fills in for me.
I was going to say, you can't say that. You have fill-ins who listen to the show.
Okay. So we'll see what ends up happening. I can tell you that there's going to be riots because I'm assuming that this kid is going to be found not guilty. That's the just way. The question is, how are officers going to be allowed to react? And then immediately, because, you know, we were just talking about staffing here in Seattle, I'm going to assume this will give enough reason to the BLM radicals and the Antifa thugs to come out and take control again of the city, do marches, get in front of the police station here. Even though, of course, we have literally, quite literally, nothing to do with the Kyle Rittenhouse case. None of us have any, no one here has anything to do with what happened in Kenosha. But they're going to do that, and we're going to be understaffed that night, and it's going to be a total chaotic nightmare. Welcome to Joe Biden's America. Weird, I don't hear Anderson Cooper saying that, despite all the record inflation that we're having, the unemployment problems that we're having, the supply chain issues, and then what will inevitably be more. Except not a summer of love, a winter of love. So we'll see. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
I'm sensing a little bit of a trend on today's show, and I promise you it wasn't intentional. I mean, I'm normally all about supporting the police, but we have a little bit more diversity on topics. But it's not my fault that all of these things are happening at once. And we found out today that the Tacoma Public School District, they've decided to make a significant change on who will be allowed to be on campus. And they are now saying, hey, uniformed police officers, get out. We don't want you here. Caro 7 TV's Gary Horker had a report.
Under a new contract with the Tacoma Police Department, two officers would be on call to respond to schools, but they would not be on campus all the time. Now, this is a change from the previous contract, which paid for five school resource officers to be stationed inside the city's high schools.
They're doing this because they believe that cops make some of their students uncomfortable, which I believe, actually, the stoner probably gets particularly uncomfortable around police. But I certainly believe that there are people on campus who will hold a position that cops shouldn't be trusted. They are taught that. Kids are taught that. Let's be clear about it. They are safer when police are around than when they aren't. There are lots of families that we can have conversations with over at Stoneman Douglas that will maybe provide some commentary. When you decide to kick cops off of a campus because you think that it makes students uncomfortable, you are making the problem worse. Because what you could have are actual good relationships between students and the police by making them a part of the community on campus, by putting them more involved in the community, by getting them in front of more faces, not fewer. And that's a really important part here. That is a key point that we have. We talk about how we want to, or we used to at least, we used to talk about the idea of creating better relationships between the communities and the police. And communities sometimes can mean the Black community, the Latino community, the Asian community. It can mean a whole host of things. But we no longer have that conversation, right? What's the conversation become? The conversation has become, we need to completely separate them, excommunicate them, keep them off campus. We have to destroy the police department. We have to dismantle it and rebuild it in the image of a social justice worker. And this is a move that puts your kids in danger. What happens when there used to be, what was the case in downtown Seattle, for example, when there were lots of cops patrolling? What was the crime situation? Was it more or less than it is now?
Less.
Why?
Because there was police officer presence, which would deter crime from happening.
Oh, you mean people don't tend to break laws in front of cops?
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant.
I mean, even the drug dealers? Wow. We took cops away from patrol. We don't have enough to do proactive policing. What has downtown Seattle become?
Open-air drug dealing, yeah. Open-air drug use, yeah. A bunch of burglaries. And assault and all sorts of crime. It's a wasteland.
It's become a wasteland. We can be honest about it. That's what it's become. When you pull cops out of schools, does that happen immediately? No. But I've been getting a lot of videos sent to me lately of a ton of pretty vicious fights that have been breaking out at schools around Western Washington. And dare I say, the 57-year-old gym teacher, while he thinks he looks good in that weirdly short shorts that he brings to the gym, not going to be able to be athletic enough to break up some of these fights. Not trained to do that either. We are sending the wrong message to kids. We should be embracing cops, not pushing them away. And that's why I'm glad a professor down in Southern California at USC, he decided to put up a Blue Lives Matter flag outside of his office. And what do you think happened when he did that on a college campus in Southern California?
Outrage.
Oh my gosh, they cried and cried and cried some more. They demanded that he take down this flag. And the professor, James Moore, he's a professor of engineering and policy, said, no, hard no, I'm good. Then they went to the diversity director or equity and diversity director to complain. And they were all like, probably, we would love to take this down because ACAB, am I right? But there's nothing in our handbook that says we have to force him to take it down. So James Moore was on Fox News this morning.
I feel a little bit of a responsibility right now. I I wanted to communicate to progressively oriented students that there's a competing point of view. They live in something of a progressive bubble on a college campus. USC is pretty representative in that respect. And I wanted to communicate to conservative students, of which there are many, that in fact they're entitled to their voice, that the messages they hear are really not representative of society at large. They get constant messaging from the senior leadership of the institution, from the leadership of their schools, from the rank and file faculty, that the world is a progressive place and the progressive point of view is the one that we should buy into.
Yeah.
And they suspect otherwise, and I wanted to alert them to the fact that they're entitled to those suspicions.
Yeah.
So to be me right now is just to feel a little responsibility to my students.
That's a good professor. That's the kind of person you would want in front of your kid. That's the kind of person who's preparing you for the real world, where, guess what? Just because you like to live on your little bubble on campus doesn't mean outside of that bubble you get to hold your sway over what positions other people get to have. Now, there's certainly bigger examples of that bubble existing, right? Seattle being one of them, LA as a whole being one. And it used to be, just up until recently, New York as well, but things got so bad that they course corrected. And that bubble started to see some holes, and soon it's going to burst. In a lot of ways, it's already burst. They embraced the Democrat mayor, or candidate for mayor, who was a former cop. And they're better off for that pick. This is a guy who's saying, yeah, guess what? You don't agree? That's okay. If you can't deal with it, that's a you problem. This world is filled with people with whom you are going to disagree, and it is okay to disagree. You get to disagree. What you don't get to do is turn your disagreement into sort of some sort of power over the other person to silence them or to get them to do what you want. You don't get to decide what other people think and what other people do. If it doesn't impact you, stay in your lane. I'll happily have a conversation with you. We can happily debate this out if you'd like. And this is a professor who sounds like he's actually willing to have a conversation with other folks. If that's not what you're about, you're just about complaining and making sure I bend to your will. Yeah, okay, go talk to someone else. Go talk to a philosophy professor, because they're, let's be honest, I mean, they're totally weak. I would say go talk to one of the gender studies one, but they probably already agree with you. They're in tears right now thinking about this.
I had a great philosophy professor, Michael Fletcher, over in at Central Washington. Great guy.
I mean, he sounds like a great teacher. I mean, why he's stuck at CWU, I don't really know.
But, hey, it's a top institute for livestock,
yeah,
okay?
It's the best.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. Look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention, our entire focus, is on the communities you care about, the ones you live in, the ones you work in, the ones that aren't Seattle. And we start in Auburn, where this is not a reflection of the people of Auburn, but sometimes people can be the absolute worst. Sometimes they devolve in ways that is not just concerning and alarming, it's just truly sad. And that was on full display after this massive apartment fire that displaced some, 100 people happened a few days ago. And it turns out it wasn't just the fire that was hurting the people who used to live in this apartment complex. Just over the course of 2 days, 15 units within the burnt out building had been looted.
They shattered my window and got in. My house is trashed. Just trash.
This poor woman talking to Cairo 7 TV, already suffering the loss of their home due to the fire. But of course, a fire doesn't always burn all of your belongings. You still have some of it left. And unfortunately, she has a little bit less of that left. And not just that, it wasn't just looting. Turns out there might have been a little bit of squatting.
There's crack pipes on my couch. I have little babies. I have a 7, 10, and 17-year-old in my house.
They destroyed pictures of my mother, who has been dead for 22 years.
Wow.
For no reason. Why? What would somebody get out of that?
It's not that they get anything other than a little bit of comfort, no matter who they hurt. I'm assuming that the drug paraphernalia means that these are not just users, but I'm guessing they're also homeless. My guess is this is a sort of squatter situation. Obviously, they did not stay. They're still not there, and that's a good thing. However, you look at this and you say, this is what addiction does to people. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they probably weren't this heartless, cavalier with the property of other people when they weren't suffering this addiction that they're suffering. Crack pipe means you are an addict. Breaking into an apartment complex, going into a unit that has been burned, makes you a desperate addict, one who doesn't care about yourself nor others. Very clearly doesn't care about this poor woman who already had to suffer through enough. And as she said, she's got a 17-year-old kid. She doesn't have to deal with this. And now this is what life has dealt her. It's a tragedy. It's sad. But even more tragic and sad is what these people are doing with their lives, who are choosing to do this kind of stuff. Now, I'm speculating, of course. They did make an arrest, and that's a good piece of news in all of this.
They caught him in my apartment with a backpack full of stuff, credit cards, ammunition, keys that belonged to my neighbor.
Yeah, sounds like a good dude. I'm guessing a lot about his background. I could be wrong, obviously. I'm going to probably lean into I'm not wrong. This is not a good person. Is this person redeemable? Absolutely. What it'll take to redeem this dude, don't know. Don't know how deep of a sort of hole this guy has found himself in, but grateful that police actually caught him. Obviously, they'll be able to return at least some of the things that were stolen and found in his backpack, allegedly stolen by him. I just hope that this is the kind of person who ends up getting help, even though, let's be honest, people in these positions tend not to get help. They're sometimes too far gone, but maybe this will be the outlier. Hopefully it will be. Meanwhile, another bit of fire news. There was a residential fire earlier this morning in Tacoma. It happened around 4:30 or so this morning. Crews from Tacoma Fire showed up, and they helped save the day and some dogs. They actually ended up rescuing 6 dogs. 5 of them, we believe, are fine and up and moving. We're not entirely sure about the 6th one. So these firefighters arrive a little bit before 4:30 and go into the house and put out the flames. They tried to vent the space from the rooftop, but the roof was too dangerous, so they ended up retreating from that. But they were still able to, in about 30 minutes or so, put out the fire. And as they were wrapping up containment of the house fire, they ended up finding 6 dogs in the house. It's unclear if there was anyone home at the time, because if they were, I'm assuming they would have said, hey, our dogs are in there. And there's no indication in this King 5 story that that was the case. They might have been away from the home maybe overnight, but it's still kind of weird to leave 6 dogs in your house. They don't know what the cause of the fire is. They are going to continue to remove debris, or were throughout the day. I don't know where they are at that point, but we can tell you that at least 2 of the dogs were given oxygen using those special masks that were designed for dogs and cats that you put around their little mouths, little noses. And as of this morning, they had put out word that 5 of the 6 dogs were up and moving again, which is obviously good news. Don't know if that means the 6th dog isn't going to make it. There's no, I've not seen any of that. They're just saying, hey, the 5 other ones ended up being fine, and hopefully the 6th dog will be as well. This is one of the reasons why I definitely could never be a firefighter. If you have people and adorable animals in a house fire, I'm not going to lie, I would question which direction I go in. Ultimately, I would hope to be able to save everyone, but I might say, do I want to go up that flight of stairs to get that family out of their bedroom? Or, I mean, this adorable little pug, and pugs can barely breathe as it is. I don't want it around all of this smoke. I would probably pause. Eventually, I would decide to go the human route, because it's still a human life, and that's more important than an animal's life. But by the time I make that decision, it could be too late for everybody, so including myself. That's why I stick to talk radio. And then finally, we head on over to the Clover Park School District, where the school board there voted to reprimand a board member by the name of Paul Wagman, or Wageman, because he supposedly printed racist comments in a private email to some random dude who doesn't even live in the district. It was caught up in publicized, this according to the TNT, and the publication of the email earned the ire of the school board. They put out a statement that said the school board has censured Director Paul Wagman for showing support for and failure to denounce derogatory terms regarding district staff charged with implementation of equity and diversity in the district, and engaging in conversations demonstrating a lack of commitment to the district's equity policy. That's really what this is about, this last part. In this email, he basically calls out the equity department, or he's critical of it, and that's why they're punishing it. It's not punishable. It's not supposed to be where you fail to denounce derogatory terms, and the term that was derogatory is one that lots of people use and is not racist. The term was race pimps. It's derogative. It's an insult. It's not racist. Tacoma News Tribune is saying that this is all racist. Now, it was dumb, his response. So here's the first email. It actually happened back in July. It's a while ago. Someone outside the school district emailed him, and the subject line was, "Race pimps have always existed, but now they are called equity officials." Now, of course, this is calling attention to the movement of so-called equity. That's not actual equity the way that normal people define the term. This is all about promoting a very racist worldview. This is critical race theory in action in schools. This is how they do it. They see everything through the lens of race and racism, where you're either an oppressed person or the oppressor. And so many conservatives and many, frankly, liberals call this out. They think it's wrong. Now, someone sending him an email, he's supposed to condemn someone sending an email? No, I don't think that's how it works. Now, according to the emails obtained by the News Tribune, it quotes Booker T. Washington that says, "I'm afraid that there's a certain class of race problem solvers who don't want the patient to get well, because as long as the disease holds out, and they have not only an easy means of making a living, but also an easy medium through which to make themselves prominent before the public." Now, the response from the school board director is, "I agree. Look at Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton's slave masters who do not care about anyone other than themselves." So this email ended up getting publicized. It was first forwarded to them by some unknown person. And the statement continues to say that the truth is that it is wrong to call equity administrators race pimps and refer to those who support equity as slave masters. Now, this is purely political. This is purely political. What do you mean the truth is that it's wrong to say that about administrators? He can say whatever he wants about the administrators. The truth is that it's wrong? Well, what if he said the truth is that it's right? What if that was his position? He didn't do this even publicly. This was privately. Not that it mattered. If he said any of this publicly, it's still not racist. I don't like the whole idea of referring to people as slave masters. I find that to be equally as ridiculous and offensive as calling black Republicans sellouts. I just don't like that language. I don't think it's a good metaphor to make. But it's also clearly not racist to say race pimps. It's very clearly making a political statement. It just happens to be a political statement that the school board disagrees with. And if you disagree with the school board, they go after you. Look at what happened in Loudoun County. Now, it's obviously turning on Loudoun County officials. The question becomes, can it turn on the Clover Park School District and the school board? Maybe not on this one particular vote with this one particular email, but they are very clearly going in the direction, as are so many other districts, most districts in the state, going down the journey of self-discovery. And by self-discovery, I mean they realize that they are all racist, because someone who wrote a book to condemn people as racist and wants to make money off of it because they saw the market opening tells them so. And I think that that's wrong. 1-800-465-877. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text. Don't forget, I will be on Tucker Carlson tonight. Make sure if you miss any moment of it, you can watch it on our YouTube page, youtube.com/JasonRants, or just text the keyword rants, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM of the Greater East Side. My next guest says a federal agency was formed illegally and now it's threatening the livelihoods of fishermen who live and work in Alaska. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, it's actually proposing a regulation that would permanently close some federal waters to commercial salmon fishing. Not because there's any environmental issue. It's all because the council said it was a little bit too hard coordinating the management duties with state officials. So in other words, it's just too hard. It's the kind of story we pay close attention to on this show because this is the kind of nonsense and abuse that can happen anywhere, including here in Washington. It's part of a case by the Pacific Legal Foundation. One of its lawyers is Michael Poon, and he joins me now. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Glad to be here.
So if you could, take us through just the basics of this lawsuit.
Yeah, so this lawsuit is really about, you know, three fishermen and all the other commercial salmon fishermen in Cook Inlet of Alaska, right, who depend on this fishery for their livelihoods. The three clients have been fishing in Cook Inlet for decades and decades. Like, this is their lives, right? But we have this North Pacific Fishery Management Council coming in and saying, you know, it's actually a little too hard to do our jobs, so we're just going to shut everything down. So, I don't know about you, but if we're going to have government managing fisheries at all, which I don't think is an obvious proposition, but if we are going to have them manage fisheries, they should actually manage the fishery, mm-hmm. right? They should actually do the work required to manage the fisheries and not just shut things down when things get sort of hard.
Now, are they just flatly saying it's too hard, or are you interpreting things?
If you look at their proposed rule, where they explain why they're adopting this regulation, it actually does say, you know, it would be complex to coordinate with the state. There's uncertainties. We might have to, because of these uncertainties, we might have to shut down the fishery early sometimes if we were to actually manage it. We might have to shut it down early sometimes. There might be restrictions. There would be regulatory burdens. So we're just going to shut down everything, as if that's better in terms of regulatory burdens and, you know, management for the fishermen, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely ludicrous. If you could, just tell us what it means to the community, what this would mean.
Yeah, so, you know, around Cook Inlet, there are a lot of communities that are based around fishing, right? So you've not just got the fishermen, but you've got the processors, which employ a lot of people. You've got the packing and the shipping and all that. I mean, the economy in this area is heavily dependent on fishing. So just this sort of broad stroke, we're just going to close everything, is the sort of callous and sort of insane and unexpected, you think, measure that we should expect when you have officials in charge who aren't accountable to the people. And that's the heart of the lawsuit, right? So the lawsuit says, you know, it points out that the North Pacific Council, it's run by these officials who aren't appointed by and can't be fired by the president. And when you have unaccountable bureaucrats with huge amounts of power, right? Like life-destroying power, but they're not accountable to anyone. This is the sort of craziness you should expect to result.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that point is well taken, or should be well taken by folks. I mean, with the signing of some regulatory paperwork, you automatically just sort of kill the livelihoods of a lot of people who depend on this, and their voices aren't really being heard. What is the process supposed to be like before they actually accept this regulation?
Yeah, so the people who sit on this council, like any other federal official that has significant power, they need to be appointed by a really stringent process. The Constitution's Appointments Clause requires significant federal power to be wielded by officials who have been nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, right? Like, that's a pretty rigorous process. You can expect that, it might not get rid of all of the politics involved, but at that level, you can expect the people who get through that process to be of a certain quality of judgment and have a certain a responsiveness to the people. And if they don't, right, you can point back to the president and blame the president and vote him out of office, right? So that's how it's supposed to work.
It's supposed to work that way. What's the timeline on getting all this done?
Yeah, so the rule has actually been finalized, and it's going to go into effect December 3rd, although the fishing season doesn't actually really start until June. So there's a little bit of time for the court to act, and we will certainly press the court to act as quickly as possible. But, you know, even if we win here, this is a problem that is, it's not restricted to Alaska. It's not restricted exactly. to the North Pacific Council, right? There are eight other fishery management councils, or sorry, eight total fishery management councils. And the West Coast is governed by one of these fishery councils, the Pacific Fishery Management Council. But it's not just fishery councils either. It's agencies across the federal government have this problem of officials who have huge amounts of power, mm-hmm. life-destroying amounts of power, who aren't appointed in any sort of accountable process and can't be fired by the president. And that's a big problem across the government.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest reason why I was interested in this story. As much, obviously, I care about fishermen in Alaska, and I don't want people's livelihoods to be destroyed. But this is one of those stories that really indicates a bigger problem for all for all the fishermen in Alaska that get impacted by this. There are thousands of others across the country who find themselves in similar positions, in similar circumstances, I should say, with these agencies that aren't really held accountable, making these decisions just on a whim sometimes. And people actually suffer as a result. So obviously we know the big picture reason why you're going after this. Let's be realistic. Is there reason to believe that a court challenge would actually work in a case like this? What have some of the other cases shown us or told us?
Yeah, so I think there is a strong possibility that we will win in this case. I think it's quite clear how much power these councils hold, and they're unconstitutional in like seven different ways. Really, they actually are. So I think there is a strong possibility that we'll win here. But then it's not just, you know, as you just said, right? It's not just the fight in this agency. It's the fight across the government and bringing accountability to the entire government.
Well, obviously, we're wishing you the best of luck. We've been talking with Michael Poon. He is an attorney over at the Pacific Legal Foundation. And check them out at pacificlegal.org, pacificlegal.org. Thank you so much, Michael, for coming on and shining a spotlight on this. Again, I think it's really important, even though on the surface people are like, well, okay, I'm not in the fishery industry. I'm not really going to pay attention. No, this is serious stuff. It really is important here. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jason. Bye.
Absolutely. If you're listening to The Jason Rancher, and don't forget I'm on Tucker Carlson tonight. Make sure you check that out if you can't watch it. When it airs, you can check out the Facebook page or my Twitter feed or my Instagram, wherever it is. It's going to be posted on social media. Just text the keyword RANTS, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. It's The Jason Rancher.